As we get started tonight, it may or may not be part of your practice. I'm going to throw it out as a word of exhortation, encouragement, something for you to think about. When we travel, honestly, we most of the time try not to travel on Sundays, but occasionally either need or the best efforts work out that way, but we also, when we're gone on Wednesday, we make it a point to try to search out the local congregations and get to visit with them, even if it's a Sunday night and Wednesday night. And it's led to some great opportunities. Sunday night, we got to stop in South Side. Every other South was coming to mind. South Side and see people such as Carly, and she certainly sends her well wishes and back home, but then places we've never been or gotten to see. And I believe that serves as a great encouragement to us as we get to see Christians in other places. It shows our family priority. Regardless of the time and circumstances, we're going to try to put those efforts first. And I believe it helps those local congregations, and I've seen great joy in getting to visit with them. And out of memories we formed at various times, I can think back on trips we've done, and oftentimes those short little visits with those congregations come to mind faster than the other things that we saw. And so I just throw that out there as maybe something for you to think about and encourage. But it was also on my mind just from the standpoint of recognizing that as we visit with those different congregations, we see the same thing that we see here from time to time. Oftentimes, it's an encouragement to us. I've written our little elder chat group more than once and said, I was reminded tonight how special it is at 9th and Main and the things that we have here and the people that we have here. But they go through cyclical cycles oftentimes as well. They go through their problems and their difficulties and their ups and their joys. And it's interesting to see. And you think about even this congregation. We've talked before of its various histories and different times. And my first introduction to 9th and Main was when we were in Brownwood and invited over on a number of Wednesday nights. And oftentimes this podium was probably there about where James is, about two-thirds almost the way back in this auditorium, and that was more than enough space. And it's nice to see a larger crowd. It's nice to see many faces. And but even there, recognize these are changes. There are ups and there's downs. So we look tonight at the idea of new beginnings, and I might have gone a slightly different direction than Mike had in his mind when he sketched these lessons out for the month. But think about beginnings are always a change. And one of the things that I thought about as we were kind of preparing and thinking about this is the simple but true statement, life is full of changes. Don't you think in your own life, the changes that you've seen? Think about kind of some of those. It caused me to think about more changes in the past 2 years than maybe I even necessarily gave thought to in my life as they were happening. To me, this is more of a special time of year. I've never been a big New Year's proponent and New Year's resolutions. Somebody's going to have to help me. My brain's in fog. But New Year's resolutions, because it oftentimes feels arbitrary to me. December 31st, guess what? The clock rolls around. It's January 1st. I don't feel a big change. But this time of year, what do you have? You have oftentimes in summer months, a lot of marriages, changes in life. You roll around into August, and anybody that has any kind of school-age kids, they're bumping up in a new grade, and it's new and exciting or fearful, but there's changes in life. We have births that occur in life. We have deaths that occur in life. Sometimes they're diagnoses of illnesses or cancers or other things that rock our world, and all of a sudden everything that we thought was stable seems kind of upended. Maybe we have a new job, and sometimes that's exciting, and other times it's discouraging. It wasn't plans. It wasn't things that we thought that we were going to do in life. But not just true as individuals, a congregation can have changes. You have families that come in. You have families that go out. You have marriages. You have births. You have growing children. You have elders that step down. We have elders that are added. We have deacons that are added. We have families sometimes move away. And all of these things create sometimes a different dynamic within a congregation. And things are different. Things change. And sometimes we perceive that as for the better. Sometimes we perceive that as for the worse. But there are changes. And so as we look at that and maybe ask you to consider even your own life, we see a lot of changes. And sometimes those changes affect our lives. How do we prepare for that? Knowing that life's going to change. Knowing everything's not always going to be the same. How do I prepare myself for that, even when I may not see that new beginning or that change coming in my life? Because that's kind of the secondary point there. Not only are changes common, is life full of changes, but as you think about those changes, sometimes you see them coming. You plan and prepare for them. I hope, as we talk about marriage, I hope something we plan for, we anticipate, we prepare for. We're planning to start that new life together. Maybe we have opportunity as we're making choices and decisions and we move to another place. I hope that's something we've given thought to. Is this going to be good for our family? Is this going to be beneficial? What's the Lord's church like in that area? Are we going to be edified and they're going to help us to grow? Or are we really going to have to buckle down and hopefully help them to grow in that area? There are changes that we can prepare for and think about. Hopefully, even maybe if we're looking down the road and we're planning, well, I want to become a parent. What am I doing to begin to prepare myself for that challenge? As we think about maybe becoming a Christian, there's a great change in our life. But hopefully it comes with thought and counting the cost, Luke chapter 9, and thinking, this is a major life commitment. The most major life commitment that I'll make in all of my life. I'm not going to take that on lightheartedly, without some great thought and without great prayer. There's other changes that there's little that can prepare you for them. Bryson gave an example this morning. You hang out with someone one day and you get the phone call the next. Their life was suddenly taken. Never saw it coming. You're sitting there and you think, well, I've got a cough. No, we found a mass on your lung. We don't know what we can do for you. Those changes sometimes can blindside us. And we don't necessarily see them coming. As you think through that, I want you to think about Bible examples too. Because this is going to come up in a moment, but the Bible is full of changes. You have Adam and Eve. Changes. New world. People upon the face of the earth for the first time. Genesis 3. New problem of sin. 3 and 4. God, you told me about the birth of my children. I wasn't ready for the thought that one of them was going to die. and that my other son was going to be responsible for it? I didn't see that coming. You got Noah. World's going to change, Noah. The eight of you, your family, y'all are going to step off into a new world, basically. You start all over. What are you going to do with it? Abraham, Genesis chapter 12, leave what you know, go into a land that I'll show you. I don't know if we give Abraham and Sarah enough credit. Go somewhere you don't have really any idea about. You just go. I'll tell you when you're there. You think about establishment of a nation. You've known servitude. You've known service. You've known back-breaking labor. God's going to give you a land flowing with milk and honey. He's going to give you rest. As a new nation, those are changes. Division of the kingdom, kings, captivity, the rebuilding, the promise you've waited forever. There's coming a Messiah. He's coming. He's coming. He's coming. He's coming. He's here. And now he's dead. But that which he promised, the church, it's now here. There's coming, as you take the gospel into all the world, there's also coming a day when it's all going to end. All of those are changes. And some of them you anticipate and plan for, and other times they're unexpected. The other thought that comes to mind as I think about changes, is I spent a lot of time thinking about new beginnings. And every time, you can challenge me on it and I'll come up with something. There is no new beginning that doesn't come with an ending. There's always an ending. Things changed and they're never going to be the way that they were. And so that's a change, good or bad, how we perceive it. But there's always an end of something. And a beginning of something else. You get married. That's a new family. That's a new life. Yes. You'll never be single again in that same concept. Well, God created the world. Yes. And that was the end of a time in which there was no history. Now there's time. Now there's history. Adam and Eve, they entered into the world. That was new. Yes, but there was never going to be a world without humans in it anymore. Well, sin, we're told sin first entered into the world by Adam and Eve, yes, and there was never again going to be a world that wasn't scarred by the result of sin. You see how all of those changes work? Sometimes I think we get caught up all the hurt of the end, and it can be hard. But recognize as well, it's a new beginning. I now live the life of that being over, and something else beginning. And as you think about that, then my final introductory point is the very idea that I hope we recognize as we think about all of these changes. Part of the point to recognize there is that these are not unique to us. Sometimes we get in that slump, and it can lead us into a bit of a depression. Look at all that I'm having to deal with in my life. Look at all of these changes. Look at everything that's coming at me so fast. And we can feel overwhelmed, and we can feel like, I just don't know if I'm going to be able to handle it. That can be understandable. Because changes can be difficult. They can be hard. But we can't stop and think, well, I'm the only one these kind of things happen to. That's when we find ourselves in a bit of trouble. So, Ecclesiastes chapter 8. Let's go there for just a moment. Excuse me. Ecclesiastes chapter 9. Ecclesiastes chapter 9. Someone, if you will, read for us verse 11 and 12. Ecclesiastes 9, verse 11 and 12.
Thought under the sun that neither yet bread to the wise, nor yet riches to men of understanding, nor yet favor to men of skill, but time and chance happeneth to them all. For man also knoweth not his time, as the fishes that are taken in an evil net, and as the birds that are caught in the snare, so are the sons of men snared in an evil time, when it faileth, falleth suddenly upon them.
And Solomon can be a bit of a depressing fellow. It's sometimes hard to read his work. Find something good. He does. But he sees a lot. And this was one of it. He said, you know, I've looked at a lot of things. You come to mind first. Chad and Lindsay, y'all were sports people. Y'all were runners, I think. Didn't matter what the practice clock said. Didn't always go that way in the real race. Sometimes the guy that was the fastest wasn't necessarily the guy that always won the race. And Solomon kind of looks at that. And he says, you know, it wasn't always the fastest that won, and it wasn't always the strongest that won in these competitions. Sometimes it just didn't go in their favor. There's a concept there of time and chance, and sometimes things just happen. And as we talk about changes and we talk about beginnings, that sometimes even changes that are forced upon us, that we didn't necessarily see coming. Even Solomon in his wisdom recognizes there are things in life that sometimes do just happen. And sometimes they're a result of the consequences of sin, and sometimes they just are. And they do just happen. And there's not a lot that we can do about that other than how we handle it when it does happen. One last verse, and we'll get into three quick points. 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 13. Yes, sir. Yeah. I'm not good at slowing down sometimes, but jump in.
When we were just reading this verse, not to bring it up, what Bryce was talking about his friend passing away, but we were so close to him, they asked me to conduct the funeral. So his whole family was just saying, why, why? And so, obviously, I didn't have an answer. So, I put Mike on the spot. I called him because, obviously, he was still in Oklahoma. And this was one of the verses that he gave me. And so, when I read it, then after everything was said and done, several of his family members came up and just appreciated that. Because that they didn't understand, but when I read this book, this verse that we just read kind of makes sense to me as well.
Right. So I thought that was... It's not going to help everybody. But sometimes we're quick to blame something and we want to reach out. And so oftentimes God's the easy one. Why would you do this to me? Why do I have to bear all of these things? And, you know, yes, I would say all death in that sense is a consequence of sin, but it's not always directly that somebody sinned in that exact situation. Might have, might have not have. But sometimes it is a hard answer, but there's time and chance. Somebody, if you will, if you're there, 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 13.
No temptation has overtaken you except such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape.
Now, give me a little latitude with this verse. But part of the problem that Paul's addressing to the Christians at Corinth is when you single yourself out and you think, well, this is a weight that only I know about. This is a weight that no one else has ever experienced. This is something no one else has ever had to go through. You're setting yourself up for a failure. And he's warning them against falling into temptation because of that kind of attitude. That you think all of this has piled on you, but there is a sense here in which God, by the pen of Paul, is reminding them, you're not alone. In all of the temptations, and if you look at that as kind of outward trials, it sometimes fits in this idea of changes in our lives. In all of these things, you're not alone. I'm trying to be careful in my language. I can only imagine what it's like to lose a son. Part of that changes I was talking about, a year and a half ago, lost my last grandparent. Probably the one I was closest to. That was hard for me. But I'm not going to tell you, I know exactly what you're going through when you lose your grandparent. No, I can imagine, and I know what it meant for me. So they're similar in nature. There are things that are alike, not exactly the same. But there is that encouragement here when we feel overwhelmed because we're facing all of these kind of trials and we're facing all of these changes in life and we have all of these new beginnings. You're not the only one who's experienced those kinds of things. And when we as a congregation even sometimes have changes new beginnings and things like that, you're not the only one. Others have endured things or been blessed by those same types of new beginnings. And so as you look at all of these things, recognizing, okay, we all face these. They're common in our lives. They're common in the lives of the biblical historical account. What do we do with it? How do we respond to it? And that's what we'll try to give some answer to in the time that we have. And so what do you do with these new beginnings? First thing I would suggest to you is that we trust God. There's a slightly negative aspect to this one, I think, but it can also be in those joyous occasions. Our verses, to kind of kick this off for the theme for the month, go back to the book of Nehemiah. In Nehemiah chapter 2, you're in this time period in which Nehemiah is preparing for the work that is ahead of him. He's heard in chapter 1, somebody's come back. Hey, tell me how it's going. I know people got to go home, and what's it like back home? Give me some report. Well, Nehemiah, you're not going to like it. The people are there. They're in the land, but the wall of the city's in ruin, and we're still a reproach unto the people. And it breaks Nehemiah's heart. What do I do with this? And we're God's people. I was excited. We went back home. That's our new beginning. What do you mean? They're still under reproach, and there's not the wall for safety and for notoriety, and there's not the wall there to bring honor and glory to the name of God. What do we do with that? Somebody read for me, if you will, Nehemiah 2. Verse 2 through 4.
Wherefore the king said unto me, why is thy countenance sad, seeing thou art not sick? This is nothing else but sorrow of heart. Then I was very sore afraid. And I said unto the king, let the king live forever. Why should not my countenance be sad when the city, place of my father's sanctuary, lieth waste, and the gates thereof are consumed with fire? Then the king said unto me, for what dost thou make request? So I prayed to the God of heaven.
So at the beginning of verse 2, and then there towards the end of verse 4, stood out to me that very idea. I was sore afraid. I knew I was troubled. I knew I was upset. Now I've shown this sad face before the king, and he's worried about me, and I was scared. I was so afraid. What do I do? The answer's there in verse 4. I prayed to God of heaven. I turned to him. There's a sense there in which, in the moment, Nehemiah is able to say, I don't know the answers. I don't know what's right. I don't know what's possible. Maybe I know what I want to do. Maybe I know what I want to see. But what is he going to allow me to do? And is what I have in mind, is it even possible? And so his mind very well could be swimming with all of these questions. And there's fear and there's anxiety and there's uncertainty about what is the future going to hold? Maybe even right in this moment. I mean, he has the power of my life in his hands. If he's displeased with me, you remember the story of the cupbearer and the baker? off with their heads, at least one of them. But in that moment, what could Nehemiah do? But he trusted in God. He knew who to turn to. We talked about that this morning in the idea, concept of prayer. Do we know that we can turn to God? It's always comforting to me when I think about a life that's full of changes. I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, but honestly, I don't know what's going to happen in 30 seconds from now, 5 seconds from now. Life, we say, sometimes changes in the blink of an eye, and that's a very true statement. We were getting a little sappy today talking about changes. Brian and Gina are off taking Danielle off to College Station for her to move in there and begin her life. And they're going to come home and be those empty nesters. And some of you have experienced some of the same things, or you see the growth of your children, or you see the events of their lives happening and unfolding before your eyes. And sometimes I'm ready for life to slow down sometimes a little bit. Sometimes we're ready for it to speed up a little bit. But changes. What's comforting in an uncertain world and uncertain times is that there is one that I can always trust in. One of my verses in that regards, and I've used it often in some of those uncomfortable funerals and times of life where, you know, you feel some of that uncertainty. Somebody turn over, if you will, read for us Psalm 46. We'll grab verse 1 through 3. Psalm 46, verse 1 through 3.
God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, even though the earth be removed, and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea, though its waters roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with its swell.
The psalmist knows the scope of all human emotion. The greatest joys of life are celebrated in the Psalms, and the deepest, darkest days are commented upon. And here I think you have kind of that hyperbole of the psalmist in which he looks at a world around him and he says, it can all be falling to pieces. I used to say I didn't ever live in a land of earthquakes. But I have been in my office here in San Angelo and seen my monitors wobble. Is it fracking? I don't know. It's an earthquake. That's all I know. The earth is shaking. I'm fortunate. That's the worst I've ever been in. Lived in Tornado Alley most all of my life, and I slept through one that went about 3 blocks from us when I was in middle school, and that's fortunately the closest I've ever been personally affected by one. But you can imagine those types of things. Maybe you've been in them. My whole world is upside down right now. And sometimes even just in the changes and the uncertainty of life, we can feel that way. Everything's upside down. Nothing makes sense anymore. I don't know what we're going to do with this. I don't know how we're going to handle that. And yet the psalmist is able to look at such an event when all of those things are going on. The Lord is our refuge and strength. A very present help in time of trouble. When all else seems to fail, you take a mountain, a solid rock, and that thing seems uncertain, but God is. God is secure. He's still there. I'd love to go through study of the book of Revelation sometime, but that theme is present very much. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. Before it was, I was. After it is, I still will be. and you go through a lot of trouble and turmoil through the book of Revelation in chapters 4 and 5, you have God on his throne, you have the lion of the tribe of Judah. You know what happens? There's turmoil and there's uncertainty and there's unknown. Chapter 12 is a big one for me. There's the constant overflowing attack of Satan against the plans of God. And every one of them fails. And you come to the end of the book of Revelation, and everything's changed except one thing. God's still on the throne. He hasn't moved anywhere. There's your certainty. I don't know what all is going to happen, but I can always trust in God. Malachi 3:6. Sometimes we use this as a comforting verse. I sometimes chuckle when I think about it. I am the Lord, I change not. Do you remember what the end of that verse says? Therefore, ye sons of Jacob are not consumed. It's really not the comforting verse that we think it is. There's an essence, there's a sense there in which God says, I really should have just destroyed you. But my nature, because I am who I am, because I will keep my promises, that's why you're not consumed. I'm going to fulfill my promises given unto Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and passed down through time, given to David and Solomon. I'm going to keep my promises. You're going to know that God is. And so even to the first century church, when things go haywire and you're under persecution and now not only are the Jews mad at you and fighting against you, and now the Romans are starting to get mad at you and fighting against you, God's still in control. And even your life may be taken from you, but there's an eternal reward. There's comfort in being able to trust in God and know that He is steadfast. There's 20,000 verses I'd love to look at, but the clock on the wall says we don't have time. 1 Corinthians 15, verse 58. Because of the resurrection of Jesus, 1 Corinthians 15, there's the uncertainty about what's facing the Christians, and some have died, and what's going to happen to them because they died before the Lord returned, and there's this uncertainty. Paul says, stop and reason for a moment. If there's no resurrection, what are we even doing? There's no hope, there's no Savior, there's no life. Give up. 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 20, but now is Christ risen from the dead. You know that. In that day, there were still people they could go ask. You saw him. He is risen from the dead. And because of that, there is certainty and there is victory in Jesus. And so he comes down in 1 Corinthians 15, verse 58, and he reminds us, he encourages and exhorts us, therefore, brethren, be steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, for as much as you know your labor is not in vain in the Lord. Do you know everything that's going to happen? And is everything always going to work out the way that you want it to and the way that you foresaw it? No. But be steadfast, be unmovable. I believe there's a concept within those two words of being steadfast. I'm going to plant my feet and I'm not going to move from this position. I'm in Christ Jesus and there's nowhere else I want to be. Steadfast, but unmovable. I would suggest to you that's outside forces. Now I'm planted and I'm not going to let anybody move me from this place. You're not going to get me outside of Christ Jesus. I'm not going to be knocked off of this pedestal. And I'm looking forward to that eternal reward. So regardless of what comes, we can trust in God. Hebrews 13, verse 5 and 6. Of course, there God saying, I will never leave you nor forsake you. We may boldly say, the Lord is my helper. Therefore, I shall not fear what men shall do unto me. Certainly a worthwhile study in and of itself. And we could spend a lot more time there. But we're reminded. We can trust in God. We can develop that a lot further, but hopefully that at least plants a seed that you can keep on thinking about. in new beginnings that are also going to come with conclusions. Sometimes they're perceived as good, sometimes they're perceived as bad, but with new beginnings, I can always trust in God. He's the one constant, He's the one stable that I will always know. Number two, the thing that I would suggest that we can do and need to do is evaluate. Evaluate our choices. Evaluate our opportunities. There are decisions before us, maybe, that we now have to make. Somebody go back, if you will, to Nehemiah. We're pulling our thought from there. Nehemiah chapter 2, if you will, read verse 14 and 15. What does he do? As Nehemiah is planning and thinking about the opportunities that are before him. Nehemiah 2, verse 14 and 15.
And I went on to the fountain gate to the king's pool, but there was no room for the animal under me to pass. So I went up in the night by the valley and viewed the wall. Then I turned back and entered by the valley gate, and so returned.
Not what I had in mind, but it's close enough because it gets the idea that we're going for. He's making plans. He's surveying the work. What are my options? What are my choices? How do we go about and how do we tackle this? How do we go about getting this accomplished? And I would suggest to you, what is the end of all of that? How can I glorify God? I came with a singular purpose. I want to see this wall restored for the glory of God and the protection of His people. So let's plan. How do we go about getting that worked? Ton of great examples. Joshua. Go to Joshua chapter 1. Message of Joshua chapter 1, Moses is dead. Change. Guess what? Moses is the one that brought us up out of Egypt. Moses is the one, sometimes reluctantly, but we learn to trust him. Moses led us through the wilderness. Moses provided for our needs. Oh, we were ready to kill him. We were ready to stone him. We were ready to turn back at times. But Moses, he got us here. Well, Moses is dead. He's not going with you any further. But Joshua. Joshua chapter 1 is a chapter of challenge, and it's a chapter of charge. And so Joshua, yes, Moses is dead, and it's time for you to rise up now and be the leader unto this people. In fact, if you begin there in Joshua 1, after verse 1, after the death of Moses, God is going to speak unto Joshua. And he says in verse 2, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now, therefore, arise, go over this Jordan, thou and all this people, in the land which I do give to them, even to the children of Israel. There's a change. There is a new beginning. Moses is no more. He got you here with the help of God, but Joshua is now going to be your leader. Joshua is the one who's going to lead the conquest as you go into the land. And there are some instructions and there's challenges and charges given unto Joshua. Great study throughout that whole chapter. Pay attention about verse 7 through about verse 8. Those charges there. You be faithful. You trust in the Lord. Do not fear. Do not turn to the left hand or to the right. All of these things are challenges to Joshua to go forth and do the task that's before him. That's what we need to do when we're faced with new beginnings. What am I going to do with this? How can I best handle this? How can I go about as a faithful servant of God and do the things that He needs for me to do? Go to the end of the book of Joshua, Joshua chapter 24. And there's a message in here time and again. The Lord fulfilled the promises given to His people. And so Joshua, we don't always necessarily think about this being at the end of his life. But Joshua is coming to the end of his life. And he turns to the people. And he challenges them in verse 14. Fear the Lord. Serve the Lord. In all sincerity and truth, turn away from the gods that your father served on the other side of the flood. And in verse 15, if it seem evil unto you to serve the Lord, choose you this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served on the other side of the flood, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you now dwell. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. I know my choice. I know my decision. This is what we're going to do. But each of you as families, you've got to decide. What are you going to do? Fortunately, you had families here on this occasion who in great good-heartedness said, we will serve the Lord. I know we're coming into a land that we didn't plant the vineyards. We didn't build the cities. God has given us all of these things. We will serve Him. There's part of that thankfulness we talked about this morning with Victor. I'm thankful for God has done for me, and so I'm going to be faithful unto Him. And we can at least say that generation did. As you drop down into verse 28 and following, Joshua let the people go, depart every man to his inheritance. The concept and idea there is, you've done it. You finished the conquest. Now, maybe not as fully as they should have, but you finished the conquest. And the new beginning before you is, go into inhabit mode. You've been in conquest mode. Now it's time to inhabit the land. Go to your homes. Go live. But live faithful to God. And sadly, as you continue, verse 29 and following, it came to pass after these things, Joshua the son of Nun died, being 110, they buried him. Verse 31, Israel served the Lord all the days of Joshua, all the days of the elders that outlived Joshua, which had known the works of the Lord that he had done. But the book of Judges is going to begin, and it was just that one generation. And then they begin turning to the foreign gods. Those are your new beginnings, and you have challenges, and you have choices, and you have decisions. You need to evaluate, what am I going to do with these? In our lives, sometimes we have to take inventory. We have to take scope of what we are going to do. Somebody grab for us 2 Corinthians 13 and verse 5. 2 Corinthians 13 and verse 5.
Examine yourselves as to whether you are in the faith. Test yourselves. Do you not know yourself that Jesus Christ is in you, unless indeed you are disqualified?
The concept of that examination and that testing, that introspection, you look at yourself. What are you doing? I think one of the great challenges, one of the great fears that we need to be honest with ourselves about is we can let a lot of changes happen in our life. And we just kind of coast through them and we don't think a lot about them. Mike's assured me it's just because I'm getting old. My kids, Priscilla, maybe they wouldn't say it, but they would admit it if I say it. I'm getting emotional in my old age. And I hopefully still have a ways to go. But part of that is looking back. I have a lot to be thankful for. I have a lot to rejoice in. But sometimes there are a lot of times I say, I'd love to redo that again. Wish I had handled that a little bit different. I know more than I knew then, and I would have approached that with a little different wisdom than I did in the day in which it happened. And so as you go through changes and as you go through new beginnings in your life, it's a necessary step sometimes to stop and say, okay, things are a little different. I'm a parent now. I'm a husband or wife now. How does that mean that I need to interact with my spouse so that we can help one another reach heaven? I'm a parent now. How do I need to be purposefully handling these children that God has given me so that I can one day return them unto Him? There's purposefulness in all of that. And if we take that lightly, those opportunities will slip by us. What am I doing to instill that faithfulness in a next generation? What am I doing to help support and encourage? All of these are things that we can look at and challenge us in our lives. So many things that we could look at. Time's got to make me move ahead. One of them, Matthew 6:33. Am I seeking first the kingdom of God? Am I putting Him first in the new opportunities and the new challenges. So I got caught up in the glitter of a new job with higher pay. But has it distracted me from my family and from my spouse? Has it distracted me from the Lord's work? As a congregation, we maybe have opportunities that open before us. Have we forgotten other opportunities? Have we gotten blindsided sometimes by something big and glittery and flashy and forgot the basic truths of God's Word that are going to save souls? There are challenges that we have to constantly evaluate and look at in our lives. And maybe the answer sometimes as we do that, good job. Keep it up. I wanted to look at Daniel. Daniel 1:8, purposed in his heart. He had a lot of changes. Taken away from home, name change. Everything about his culture was trying to be changed. I'm going to be faithful to God. He determined in his heart. You look at him in Daniel chapter 6 at the lion's den. I believe you're looking at a man 16 to 18 years old in Daniel chapter 1 that has already determined, I'm going to serve God. I believe you're probably looking at a man about 85 years old or so in Daniel chapter 6 when he's thrown in the lion's den and people are saying of him, you can't accuse him of anything. If you want to charge Daniel with something, it's going to be in the service of his God. Make it illegal to serve his God, and we got him. That was the only thing that they could find. A faithful man through all of the changes that he would go through in his life. And so in those changes, evaluate and see how we can be faithful unto God quickly. Number 3, let those changes renew our zeal. Sometimes this is easy, and sometimes it's hard. When the changes and new beginnings aren't necessarily welcome, it's hard to renew our zeal. I feel like I'm recovering. I feel like I've been beaten up. I feel like I don't know what I'm doing. And I'm just hoping this is going to work. That's where we've got to look and say, okay, I'm going to trust God. I'm going to evaluate, what can I do? This is what's ahead of me. These are the cards, if you will, that I've been dealt. What am I going to do with it? And allow that challenge to renew our zeal. Say, I know first and foremost, I will serve God. Do I maybe now have all the answers and exactly how that's going to look? No. But I'm going to seek and honor and glorify Him. When changes are good and we're excited about them, they can be much easier to renew our zeal. It can become much easier to feed off of that energy and say, hey, there's all kinds of new doors and there's new opportunities open before us and we want to seize them. For time, we won't read it. You can go back to Nehemiah 2, verse 17 and 18. Nehemiah, having surveyed the city, is going to go back to the people. And he says, it's time to get to work. We can rebuild this wall. We can put it together. We can honor and glorify God. And the people with a great zeal now are ready to go to work. And that's what they do. And in 52 days, they're going to finish that city. They've been there. They could have done it at any time. There's a new beginning. There's new zeal. Let's go to work. And the people had a mind to work. We can do that in our families. We can do that in our personal lives. We can do that in congregations. Reignite that zeal. Have that effort that I want to honor and serve God. Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 10, the concept or idea there, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all of your might. This is the life in which you have to live. And so this is the life in which you have to honor and glorify God. Have the attitude expressed in Isaiah 6 and verse 8, here am I, send me. Put me to work. Maybe I need to learn. Maybe I need to grow. Maybe I need to be challenged. Maybe I need to push out of a comfort zone a little bit. But I want to be used. I want to be helpful. I want to help my family. I want to help my spouse. I want to help my congregation. I want to help my neighbors. I want to help those that are about me. Let's recognize the work that's before us and be ready to go to work. You look at the disciples. at the end of the gospel accounts, flowing into the book of Acts, and you see a people that were scared and hiding in fear, and those who had deserted. But that's not who you see in Acts chapter 2. These people recognized, hey, the promises that God has given us are fulfilled. We saw the resurrected Savior. He told us to wait in Jerusalem until power came from on high. Acts chapter 2, this is that. It's happening right before us. Peter and the others stand up and boldly proclaim. So much so, in Acts chapter 4 and verse 13, they take note of Peter and John that they had been with Jesus. Why? Because of their boldness. New opportunities lay before them, and they grabbed them, if you will, by both horns and went to work. All that you do, in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord, giving thanks unto God and the Father by Him. Colossians 3 and verse 17. A lot of other challenges we could set there. A lot of other changes that occur through the pages of the Bible that exhort and encourage us. Use those new beginnings. Use those changes. And figure out, how am I going to use this circumstance? How am I going to use this new stage of my life? How am I going to use the opportunities, whether they're the ones I wanted or not? How am I going to use them to honor and glorify God? And so that's the challenge and the exhortation to us all, hopefully as individuals, as families, as a congregation as well. We face changes and we face challenges, and you know, we face new opportunities all the time. But regardless of what comes, let's make sure that we are trusting in God. That sure we're evaluating and make sure the way that we're handling things and the way that we're going about things are the best way in which to honor and to glorify God and to be able to help others. And then with that knowledge, with that resolve, renew our zeal. I want to go forth and I want to be active. And I want to honor and serve God so that it's going to strengthen my family, it's going to strengthen my home, so that my congregation is going to be strengthened, so that my city is edified and exhorted and encouraged as the gospel goes forth, indeed even unto all of the world. Changes are coming. They come to us all. The question is, what will we do with them? So, appreciate your time and attention. I know I don't always pause well for comments, but appreciate those that are given and those who were willing to read for us. And again, certainly hope that's at least a challenging thought to make us think a little tonight. I think we ask Royce to close us in prayer tonight.